You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. We're on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. At the close of a new biography of Mary Todd Lincoln, historian Catherine Clinton calls the wife of the 16th president flawed and brilliant, at war with herself as well as social convention and polite society. Mrs. Lincoln is a fascinating figure. She was well-educated and a charming young woman. Born into a wealthy Southern slave-owning family, she became an abolitionist. She was an important sounding board for her husband. But as Clinton notes at the outset of her book, the most common question posed of her biographers is this: was she crazy? This afternoon, we'll take a closer look at the life of Mary Todd Lincoln. Catherine Clinton, author of Mrs. Lincoln, A Life, is our guest. The book is the first biography of Mrs. Lincoln in 20 years. Listeners, what questions do you have about Mrs. Lincoln? I invite your phone calls for our guest, Catherine Clinton. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Catherine Clinton is also the author of Harriet Tubman, The Road to Freedom, which was named as one of the best nonfiction books of 2004 by the Christian Science Monitor and the Chicago Tribune. She's also the author of Fanny Kemble's Civil War. She's a member of the advisory committee to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Bicentennial Commission. Her new book, Mrs. Lincoln, A Life, is published by Harper. Catherine Clinton joins us this afternoon by telephone from Northern Ireland, where she holds a chair in U.S. history at Queen's University, Belfast. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Catherine Clinton, good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm great, Celeste. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I appreciate it
being back by radio back in Illinois.
In the land of Lincoln.
That's true. Lincolnland is where I've been visiting the past few years and spending a lot of time and enjoying it.
I understand that you were at the big bicentennial celebration, the kickoff for this year of celebrations and special events in Springfield. What was it like?
Well, it was a good bet on my part because as a member of the commission, I was invited to lots of events in Washington, D.C., and of course at the birthplace in Kentucky, and also in Springfield. I had spent a lot of time in Springfield trying to see it summer, winter, spring, and fall, trying to really soak up the town as well as working in the archives. But when I had to pick a place to make the long trip, I decided to brave the elements and come to Springfield. Imagine my surprise when it was a really balmy February and made even more exciting by the appearance of President Barack Obama. So he did come to the dinner of the Abraham Lincoln Association, and he did really highlight what a historic occasion this was to celebrate the bicentennial in Springfield. And it was a very inspirational speech about looking back over the 100 years between the centenary celebration, where blacks were actually not invited to participate and had their own separate celebration, and looking at our celebration in 2009 as a country, as a nation, as Lincoln's legacy, I think, in the 21st century is still very much a part of our heritage and something that reaches out internationally to people.
It was an historic moment.
It really was.
Yeah. Mrs. Lincoln was a controversial figure in her time, and she's not received much respect in ours. Why has that been the case?
Well, I think she was certainly a woman ahead of her time, a woman who spoke her mind. She was quite acerbic as well as witty. She was quite blunt as well as diplomatic, and she was very interested in politics from a very young age. She was clearly under her father's spell when she was younger. She went to 10 years of formal schooling, which was quite unusual. She was more educated than most men of her day, not just most women, and she was someone who wanted to be a full partner in her husband's enterprise in his political career. When she met Lincoln, actually, he was not the real star that he would become, but rather was a gawky young prairie lawyer who was the partner of one of her cousins And she was discouraged from even entertaining notions of having him as a suitor because one of her relatives says he was not much above the dirt floors that his family was born into. But she persisted, and by being so stubborn and obstinate, she did wed her lawyer, and she did become a partner, as I write about in the book. Lincoln was a very oral politician. He liked to speak his speeches ahead of time. He often would read out his letters. The eloquent Lincoln that we know was someone who was not that skilled by accident, but he really honed his craft. And Mrs. Lincoln was someone who probably heard more of his words and speeches than anyone else.
Mm. As you mentioned, the Todd descendant saying Lincoln's people had not yet struggled up from dirt floors, and Abraham Lincoln as a young man was dirt poor. He was rough around the edges. What did she see in him?
Well, I think that's one of the true achievements. Although we look at her and I can talk about her being brilliant or witty, I don't have as many examples that I would like. The evidence base is really quite thin because we do know for a fact that she went out before she went to Washington and burned a lot of her letters. And we also know her only remaining son, Robert, collected her letters and destroyed them. So we don't really have that insight into, you know, what was so remarkable about her. But we do know that she felt that Lincoln was a diamond in the rough. She used that particular phrase. And she also must have seen in him quite a sympathetic character. We know from an early age he suffered from depression. We know he suffered from the blues. Some people have suggested he might have had a clinical depression. And when he was quite young, he did suffer an episode during their courtship. So for 18 months, they didn't even speak to one another. And when they finally renewed, she very much committed herself to him because, after all, there she was, the belle of Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Their courtship goes off the rails. Everyone in town is talking about it. Lincoln goes off the rails, and people are worried about his mental health. And yet she stuck with him. I think she saw in him a kind of inner restlessness, the engine that would and could make it to the to rise within society, that need to rise with something. They'd both lost their mothers at a young age. They both suffered loss. And I think they found in one another a kind of tender solace that I try and write about in my book.
Mm-hmm. And both of them bright. He not as educated as she was, but both of them very bright, very charming.
His self-education was so remarkable, and certainly I'm sure he educated her in many things. And he was such a reader and such a thinker, and that she could have someone who would truly engage in political discussion. Of course, the political discussions often revolved around votes, and they kept records together. And during his two Senate races, she was quite a outspoken and vociferous supporter of her husband against all odds, and he did lose two Senate races before he finally did win the presidency.
Yeah, and go ahead.
And when he did win the presidency, the news came in on the Telegraph, and he was at the Telegraph office surrounded by friends and backslapping congratulators, and he said there was a little woman at home who might be more interested in the news than even he was, and he recognized her as a full partner. And I even found a letter from Edward Everett, who was so impressed by Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, of course, because Everett was the featured speaker at Gettysburg and spoke for 2 hours. And we know the economy, the beauty, and really just the gorgeous Gettysburg Address was such an achievement. But it's also true that Everett wrote to a friend and said that Lincoln had obviously been influenced by his wife because he found his manners quite winning.
Mm.
So she had an influence on him in many ways. And I do think it's difficult to say if he hadn't had someone who believed in him, if he hadn't had someone with her family connections, it's hard to say how far he would have gone in politics, considering how he was defeated repeatedly before his triumph as the first Republican president.
Yeah. There are two photos early on in the book that depict the Kentucky homes of the Lincolns and the Todds.
Yes.
And the Lincoln home is perched above the Todd home.
Yes.
But wow, describe these two places for us. I think that will give listeners a real sense, immediate sense of how, what different backgrounds these two individuals came from.
Well, they both did come from Kentucky, and they were only born a decade apart. And yet when you go to Kentucky and you see the stretch of road between Hodgenville and Lexington, it doesn't seem that far. But I tried to, very early on, in the chapter describing Mary Todd's childhood, to try and contrast it actually with Lincoln's childhood. Well, her family were going off to spas. His father was an itinerant farmer, ending up at Sinking Creek, trying to make a go of it. I did use a shot of the cabin without being enclosed in the great marble palace where it is right now. We don't know that it was the Lincoln birthplace cabin, but we know there is a cabin in Hodgenville. And it's so humble and so small, and it represents so much to those people who made the pilgrimage there in the early 20th century and people who continue to go there. It shows that out of this very, very small, near manger-like birthplace, we have one of America's greatest presidents. And contrasted with that, you go to Lexington, Kentucky, and you see the preservation of Mary Lincoln's childhood home. And this actually is the first lady's home to be preserved. It was the wife of a governor of Kentucky who instituted the campaign to try and turn Mary Todd Lincoln's home into a showplace. And I used the term Mary Todd Lincoln in there because that's the name of the home. But I was quite struck when I discovered that when she did marry her husband, Mary Todd never used the name Mary Todd Lincoln. She used the name Mrs. Lincoln or Mary Lincoln. But it is the Todd family, the family that had senators, ambassadors, that out of this childhood home, her father was a great businessman, a great entrepreneur, a great politician, and she knew the great Henry Clay. She mm-hmm. knew Vice President Johnson. She was at the center of political power. So showing these two homes, I think, shows, I think, the great contrast in their beginnings.
Mm.
But, of course, Mrs. Lincoln knew that she, as a woman, would not be able to follow her own destiny, that her destiny would be determined by the man she might marry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she did marry rather late. As a Southern belle, she was unconventional, brilliant, and she would not settle for the people that her family had picked out for her, a widower with two small children, or the grandson of Patrick Henry. Instead, she saw something in Abraham Lincoln, and I think she was really a kind of yeast that helped him to rise.
Mm. Also, she had a rebellious streak.
Very much.
Yeah.
She didn't like the ladylike role to which she was often confined. She had a temper, quite clear, from an early age. And she was someone who liked to defy convention. And this would often get her into trouble. And by the time she did take on the role of wife of the president, moving into the executive mansion, she was a very controversial first lady. Of course, it was not really to be predicted that Lincoln would be elected, and within weeks of his election, within weeks of taking the oath and moving into the White House, soldiers would be bivouacked in the East Room, that she would be surrounded by people who viewed her as a Southern-born first lady, as the sister-in-law of Confederate soldiers, as having so much Confederate kin that she was even viewed as an enemy in the White House. And that really shows that for the first time, the White House symbolized the nation at war. It was a divided home in the eyes of many Americans.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, historian and biographer Catherine Clinton. She is the author most recently of Mrs. Lincoln, A Life. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now, a listener in Piatt County, line 4. Hi.
Oh, hello. It's so confusing to hear so many different sides of Mary Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln. But I was listening, and I'm sorry to say, not with, you know, in great attention, but somebody was on David Inge's program discussing Lincoln on the circuit, as a circuit rider in his years on the circuit. And this gentleman stated that Lincoln enjoyed the circuit so much and seemed to, or, you know, theoretically enjoyed it so much because of the time he spent away from his wife because of her temper, and suggested that she was bipolar. So I hadn't heard, I mean, I never thought of that, and it kind of stuck in my mind. So I'd like to ask about that, and then I'd also like to ask if she ever reconciled with her son, Robert, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you so much for the program.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Well, I'm certainly aware of a lot of colleagues who write about Mary Lincoln and suggest that she either suffered from depression or bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, narcissism. Certainly there's a sort of full slate of medical conditions to which she's been assigned by scholars. Some have even gone so far as to use medical testimony at the end of their books. But I would suggest that, for one, I don't have a medical degree. But as an historian, when I go back and I look at her behavior and I look at the patterns, I do try to come to some what I hope are balanced conclusions about her behavior. As for the circuit question, I do think that his inability to come to the marriage with property and standing meant that they actually married when he had a debt. Lincoln saw being a lawyer out on the circuit as a way out of that debt. He was very ambitious. He also wanted to be elected, and he came out of New Salem, a defeated candidate at one point, and wanted so much to win over the people that being out on the circuit gave him both a financial and a political foundation within Illinois. Now, I do know there are people who say that Mrs. Lincoln was so difficult to live with that her husband sought this relief elsewhere, but we also know that Lincoln was very much comfortable with men, that I argue he was happiest on the stump with a hostile audience rather than in a lone parlor with a woman. But as he definitely did seem to seek her company, seek her advice. We do have evidence when he was first elected that she was quite vocal about the kinds of people she thought he should be depending on, putting forward. I suggest that the picture of her as a deranged or unstable woman from her days in Springfield doesn't really mesh with the picture of her that I've collected. Of course, most of the reminiscences about Mrs. Lincoln that appear in Herndon and other books were collected after she refused to return to Springfield following her husband's death. So a lot of it is what was said at the time, what was said in retrospect, and I do try and, I think, give a balanced picture. But one of the things I am very much putting forward is it's time that we revisit these questions and look at how she might have contributed, look at the evidence that's there that suggests that they did have a loving relationship and not, as some biographers have characterized, that maybe he never loved his wife. There are some people who say that Lincoln might have never loved a woman, for that matter. So my book is meant in many ways to answer some of the controversy that has come up in the past decade about Lincoln's sexuality, about Lincoln's proclivities. But I'm happy to take on more questions, but there was that question of her son, Robert, that I'm happy to return to.
Yes, then that is a fascinating part of this story. It's so sad. And Robert, her son Robert, after the assassination, then a few years later, I do believe, I don't recall now how many years later.
It was actually 10 years to the month after her husband's assassination, so it was an anniversary, which were always very difficult for Mary Lincoln.
That Tad died.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to say the confinement. No,
oh, no,
he died in 1871, so it was quite sad. His death was in 1871, and it was actually shortly before the Chicago fire. She decided to resettle in Chicago, and they were abroad, and she brought Tad back because he was homesick, wanted to see his brother Robert, wanted to see Robert's new baby. And within weeks of coming to Chicago, he died of a lung ailment after a really protracted and horrible illness, and Mrs. Lincoln had to bury her third of four sons.
Yeah, and she suffered so many losses during her life, and Tad's death certainly came as a blow, and then she deteriorated, could we say that? And
I think definitely.
Yeah.
The loss of Tad, who was a young man who was very devoted to his mother after the death of his brother Willie in the White House. He really became his parents' the light of their lives, that he was someone who kept Mrs. Lincoln from sinking into depression and not recovering. Lincoln at one point took her to the window of the White House and looked out over the river to an asylum and warned her that if she didn't recover, that's where she would have to be taken. So Tad was someone who could jolly her out of her blues. And after her husband's death, she did say that Tad was her one reason to go on living. So imagine the blow of his death. And by then, Robert was married, Robert was launched, and his wife, Mary, was someone that Mary Todd Lincoln increasingly didn't get along with Mary Harlan Lincoln, her daughter-in-law. And so she really was feeling, I think, alone and estranged during the years between 1871 and 1875. We don't even have a very good record of where she was living during that period. She was kind of a gypsy and very sad. And at one point, she thought her son Robert was dying, and she came on a train, and she came alarmed and was sending telegrams. And Robert was so concerned about his mother's mental health that he consulted both with doctors and with lawyers and decided that she might harm herself. It was his belief at the time, and people again feel it's a very controversial matter that his political career was on the rise, and for him to take his mother and to put her in front of a court in Chicago, which would rule on her mental competence and ruled against her and had her confined within 24 hours to an asylum, was perhaps a precipitous step. But there is evidence to show that Robert weighed this matter quite carefully. It was very painful for him. And we don't know what particular state Mrs. Lincoln was in at that time. We do have some new letters that have emerged just in the past few years. In 2005, a young scholar named Jason Emerson discovered some letters that were written by Mrs. Lincoln during her confinement. To my mind, these letters show that her debilitated state when she was first confined to the asylum was quickly amended when she recognized that she had been really, truly abandoned by all these men she loved, and she sought out her sister, Elizabeth, to take her in, and Elizabeth did take her out of the asylum into her home, and she was, within a year, she was able to recover her legal rights. She then escaped to Europe, and she did write about it as an escape because she feared that her son Robert might try to reinstitutionalize her.
And was there... How was their relationship then for the rest of her life?
Well, quite clearly, when she was abroad, she became quite homesick. She became nostalgic. And there is evidence to suggest that, for example, when Robert seemed to be mentioned in political circles as a vice presidential candidate, she got very excited about it. When she did come back to Springfield, she did see him. He brought young Mamie, his daughter, who she thought of as her namesake, to visit. And we do see that not only did Mary Lincoln spend time with her son, but also her daughter-in-law and her son accompanied her to New York for medical care. So there was a sense of reconciliation between them. And then when she did pass, she actually left Robert a large inheritance.
And she died in 1882.
Yes.
In her 63 years old.
She died in the home of her sister in a bedroom above the parlor where she had married Abraham Lincoln.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, historian and biographer Catherine Clinton, author of Mrs. Lincoln, A Life. You say Mary Lincoln was one of the first women in the White House to capture the public imagination. How and why did the public become interested in her? How did the press treat her?
Well, she was the first wife of a president to come from the plains. In a sense, Lincoln was the first president born outside of the original 13 colonies. He was identified with the West, and when Mr. and Mrs. Lincoln came on the train to Washington, all sorts of people turned out to see them, thousands, literally. The press was full of reports on her. When she arrived in Washington, people came to pay call. People wanted to see her, to gawk, certainly to critique her. At the inaugural balls, we had a sort of fashion watch that was not unlike what happened with the recent inauguration in Washington with Michelle Obama, yeah. With people saying, what does she look like? What's her style? And I found it very surprising that the press was so intense that they would actually ask people to go in disguise to try and sneak into her hotel. There were people hired. So she was the first lady to be chased by paparazzi. I found a reporter who said, should she ever leave the White House, the Telegraph would trill with the news of her every move. So she was hounded by the press. She was, of course, the daughter of a former slaveholder. She was the sister-in-law of Confederate generals. She had brothers serving in the Confederate Army, and here was her husband, commander-in-chief, trying to hold the nation together. She had to have all of her correspondence read before she was allowed to read it. Everything she wrote was read by Lincoln's secretaries. This was a means of protection because there was so much hate mail flowing in and out during this period. But it also meant that she felt very much on her own, very much cut off from the world. She found herself in Washington, where half of the politicos left. Some of the people might call her Cousin Mary as a Southern symbol, and that was looked on as very suspicious. And the abolitionists thought maybe she wasn't Republican enough for them, and the Southerners thought she was too Yankee for them. So she really was a kind of woman without a country, but she devoted herself to her husband and the Union. And she was quite outspoken about seeing Washington as the capital. She was asked to evacuate. She refused to leave. She wanted the White House, which was a tattered, frayed home, to be restored. And actually, her refurbishment of the White House was one of her first and most controversial acts because she did overspend the budget, angering her husband. She began to look for other means to pay off her bills. And I do suggest that since the media began to attack her on this point, we find that she's one of the first people in America to be diagnosed with a shopping mania. Indeed, in her early years of widowhood, when she was only wearing black and she tried to divest herself of some of her wardrobe because she did buy luxurious goods and she did wear jewelry and she was given lots of materials, she tried to sell them in New York as a widow to pay off some of her debts. And this became known as the old clothes scandal. So Mrs. Lincoln is often associated with being a shopaholic. And I found this one of the things that was most closely associated with her reputation, which I think contributes to this notion of her mental instability.
Yeah. She was the first presidential wife to be referred to as the First Lady.
In print, yes, we find this, and I think she took on the role of the wife of the president and tried to change the protocol of White House visits. She opened the White House up for levees instead of state dinners. She wanted to have more people come in and see the White House.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Catherine Clinton, author of Mrs. Lincoln, A Life, is our guest in this portion of the program. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, I know what it was.
Well, I was going to tell you something about the White House that I think a lot of people don't know, and that is that she was, as I said, in this isolated position. And we know, of course, that she always feared for her husband's safety. There had been assassination attempts. There had been threats against his life. So imagine how Lincoln must have felt in July of 1863 with the great army massing and coming into Pennsylvania, with Vicksburg on the horizon, with the war going badly, with great drama, with of course, the Emancipation Proclamation and a lot of rebellious talk about Lincoln being such a lover of, quote, the Negro. And Mrs. Lincoln was so worried about her husband, she wanted him to get fresh air. So they moved out to the summer White House, the summer home, the soldiers' residence. And Lincoln would go back and forth to the White House on business. And one day, he decided not to take his carriage, but to actually ride a horse. And Mrs. Lincoln took his carriage instead. And she was thrown from the carriage, hit her head on a rock, was severely injured at the time, was feared near death. And there's every bit of evidence to demonstrate that this was sabotage, that she was actually suffering from an attempt on his life. And we do have the telegrams that he sent to Robert summoning him to come at once. We do know that it was a very dramatic episode. We also know that Robert Lincoln thinks that this head injury was something that unbalanced his mother perhaps even more than the death of his brother Willie the year before. So I do think by looking at a lot of the correspondence and looking more carefully at her role, I found things out about Mrs. Lincoln that surprised me and enlightened me, and her role as a controversial first lady can show that there are even more kinds of controversies hidden away.
Let's take another couple of calls now. First, we go to Bloomington, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. It's very interesting. I have read a couple of, well, it's several, but two that I'm referring to, the letters, the recently discovered letters that you referred to.
Yes,
earlier.
Yes.
And another book that intrigued me, and I'm sorry that I can't remember the author's name, but he says in he ends his book with saying this is an example of man's inhumanity to woman.
Oh, my.
Yeah, somewhere in there he refers to some speculation that she died of a diabetic coma, that she was a diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of the ones that you mentioned, of course, were mental. And it could be a physical, you know, that certainly a diabetes would affect her emotional state. But and I hope I remember this. I won't remember it word for word, but he refers to a letter that Robert wrote, I believe, to Jesse Fell. He says that they had, 12 judges there, and took her to court. Within 15 minutes, they had sent her to the home. And I'm sorry I missed some of your conversation. So
that's all right.
You may have already said that.
It's a dramatic episode. I do want to say it's even more complicated in that someone of Mrs. Lincoln's pride was certainly humiliated and terribly, terribly wounded by having her only remaining son put her to this public shame. But actually, having a public trial was a reform introduced in Illinois to protect women from being put away without a fair hearing, because it was thought that an earlier case that had challenged this was a husband who had had his wife's temperature taken, and then after that medical evidence, she was put into an asylum and was spent a long time agitating to get out, and then when she got out, introducing reform. So actually, Illinois was one of the few states that had a public hearing before a woman could be confined. But Mrs. Lincoln's particular trial was splashed in the headlines. Mm-hmm. And this was something I think that she felt deeply wounded by. And in some way, the public humiliation kept her out of the limelight, out of circulation. And she went to Europe, where she felt that people understood her role as first widow or widow of the martyr president, and not in America, where she feared that people would point at her, scorn her, and and really question her sanity.
Which they would. But he quotes this letter that Robert wrote to, I believe, Jesse Fell, that my mother's become a bother to me.
Yes. And so there is a lot of suggestion that Robert was just trying to get his mother out of the way. She also was carrying around a lot of money on her person, which was dangerous. He had guards following her at one point to protect her, but he really feared that, you know, someone walking away with bearer bonds would be really endangering themselves.
Yeah. Well, he also says that I've lost what I was going to say, but it has occurred to me so many times that, I mean, losing three children and a husband, I mean, you know, you could hardly stay very balanced after something like that.
I think that it's just time to really try and put it into a more of a perspective. I try to think about, just as you're saying, what would it have been like to have that kind of loss? But I also open my book with the scene of the deathbed of Abraham Lincoln, because his assassination was so traumatizing, yet a 19th century wife knew her duty, and that was to be by the side of her dying husband. And I tried to recreate that scene because, to me, it was so deeply, deeply shocking to discover that Edwin Stanton ordered that she be taken from the room and not be allowed in, and that meant that when her husband died, she wasn't there. And her wails were what the people standing outside the house heard to announce that Lincoln had indeed died, that she was robbed of that sacred duty of the 19th century woman to be there for her loved one.
Yeah. And also in that opening of the book, you also give us a very intimate moment between husband and wife as they're sitting in the theater that night. It seems that they were flirting a bit with one another.
Well, he'd sent her a note to invite her out on a carriage ride, and they'd gone on a carriage ride that day. And I think that was a day of real reconciliation because their son, Robert, had returned home. And the last few months of Lincoln's life, he, of course, was dealing with so many issues, but one of them that weighed on him heavily was at long last he'd succumbed to his older son's demands that he be allowed to enter the army. Mary Lincoln had begged, pleaded, wheedled, and finally Lincoln gave in to his son's wishes, and he was detailed to the staff of General Ulysses S. Grant. But imagine what weighed on the Lincolns to have their son in the army when we know about the row upon row of dead soldiers. We know about the growing concern, and certainly it was hope that the war would be over soon, but that was a hope every Christmas while the Lincolns were in the White House.
Let's take another call, a listener on a cell phone, line one. Good afternoon.
Yes, I have purchased the book. I haven't started it yet, but I'm not a fan of Robert. I read The Madness of Mary Todd Lincoln by Jason Emerson, and he said, you know, in a nutshell, that the letters prove about Mary's mania and instability and with her ranting and raving. And, you know, if my son had me committed to a insane asylum without a doctor ever examining me, and I was just taken from my hotel room and brought to the courtroom in Chicago, I'd be ranting and raving as well, and she never would have gotten out if it hadn't been for the work of Myra Bradwell. But anyway, and then another.
Well, but what I like about these letters, let me say, is that Jason does reprint them at the back of his book, and you, I think, give a fairly good interpretation. But I'm saying I read the same letters, and I come to quite a different interpretation. And I do give some examples in my book where other scholars, such as Michael Burlingame, have read a remark or a comment or a letter, and they read it putting Mary Lincoln in quite an unfavorable light. And I can read the exact same letter or comment and read it differently. And so scholars have to really agree to disagree and have different interpretations.
Oh, right. Yes. And but I am, and I do have a different interpretation. I don't I also don't think that Robert and his mother, from what I've read, and I've read every book about Mary Todd Lincoln, I don't think that they ever reconciled. And Mary did leave her estate to him because she didn't leave a will. And her will wasn't discovered until just really a few years back. I believe it was found in a trunk in Chicago in Robert's attorney's office, a man by the name of Towers. So I think Robert was very afraid that his mother was going to spend all her money and nothing would be left for him. And mm-hmm. he had hired detectives to have her, it followed her. And you know, she thought people were following her, and they were indeed, because Robert had hired people, and he didn't like the fact that she was involved in spiritualism. Well, you know, that's really no different from people's involvement in religion today, and it was a source of comfort for her, and it didn't do anybody any harm. She, you know, she may have been eccentric, and she may have bought a lot of curtains and gloves, but you know, this was before compulsive shopping was fashionable, and I think for him to do this to his mother is just really unforgivable. But anyway, I'm going to hang up and then listen. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your comments. I do know people feel quite strongly about the legacy of Mrs. Lincoln, and I thought it was time that I tried to address some of these issues and also really to contextualize some of them. For one thing, I'm so pleased that that your caller, Celeste, mentioned gloves, because actually when Imelda Marcos came into the headlines, people started talking about shoe fetishes, and for many years I heard Mrs. Lincoln and her shoes was something, and I found out that she actually did have quite an interest in buying lots of gloves. But then as an historian, I dug around and discovered that it was the Lincolns would always bring in lots of people in the White House, and you were to shake hands with almost everyone, and you frequently would peel off your gloves and put on a new pair because people had hands
soiled,
that were quite soiled. And so going through gloves at a public reception was a kind of common thing. So one of the things was to find out about why she did buy such large quantities of items, and also it was something that she was gifting to other people. She was quite a generous person, as well as being someone who was quite eccentric.
One of the things that we haven't talked about, and I would like to wrap up with a question or two about, is Mary Todd and her views of slavery, both as Mary Todd and then as Mary Lincoln.
Sure.
Slavery was a fact of everyday life for the Todds in Kentucky. And she dearly loved her father, Robert Smith Todd. But eventually she was transformed and she became an abolitionist. How did that happen?
Well, I did find that, like many Southern women living in a slaveholding part of the world, she didn't think much about it. When she moved off to out of Kentucky, out of the orbit of slaveholders, and moved out to Springfield, there were a lot of challenges to slavery as a system, as a way of life, attitudes. And I also found that she was someone who was very much influenced by her grandmothers, and both her grandmother Parker, her mother's mother, and her grandmother Humphrey, her stepmother's mother, freed their slaves upon their death, not all, but wrote wills which were quite emancipationist. And this, I think, was something that had an influence on her as a young woman. Of course, her husband's growing preoccupation with questions of race, emancipation, and slavery. But also, Mrs. Lincoln was very affected by her personal relationships. And one of the things I write about in the book is the community of African Americans who worked in the White House,
mm-hmm.
who she knew. And Elizabeth Keckley was someone she hired to be her dressmaker. She soon became much more, a confidant, a friend. At one point she wrote her and she said she was one of her best friends, although they later had a falling out. But I felt as if both Charles Sumner, who was someone that she courted as an intellectual, was someone she wanted her husband to be a part of his circle, and she was in the circle of abolitionists who I think converted her as much as she converted them, that the nation could come back together, the nation would come back together, that slavery was something that needed to be eradicated in the land. And that was something she came to believe very strongly. Hmm.
Catherine Clinton, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Catherine Clinton is the author most recently of Mrs. Lincoln, A Life. The book is published by Harper.